What in God's name do you need to solve it for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark Latham.
Okay, he joins us each and every Thursday afternoon, and we're pleased to say he's joining us this afternoon. Mark Latham, hello, leader of One Nation in New South Wales. How are you, Mark?
Yeah, good, thanks, Brent. Good to be with you, and looking forward to the fortnight of New South Wales Parliament coming up as we get right back into it.
Today is the D-Day for you. I know that it's been on all the news services as headlines today. Do you want to make any comment about this? Alex Greenwich has said he is going to launch defamation action against you.
Well, Brent, every time I talk to you truthfully about this matter, giving my side of the story, I get more letters from Greenwich's solicitor, who keeps the post office busy. I can say that. It's a letter a day. These people are litigious. Greenwich has taken this outside the parliament, something he started. I visited and attended and spoke to a meeting in a church hall. He described me as a disgusting human being, as extremely hateful and dangerous for talking in a church hall. So, you know, the defamation in the first instance was his. And to carry on like this, I can't explain why he is so litigious other than he's one big sook. But I'm not going to say anything more than that. I've given my account on your program, and true to form, I got lawyers' letters about it. So there you go.
Okay, let's leave it today. Thank you for saying something. I mean, because, you know, I get lots of people here. Here's just one email that I had this afternoon in reference to, you know, please pass on our support to Mark Latham. And so there's lots of people that listen to us of an afternoon that are supporting you, Mark, and say power to you, okay?
Well, I appreciate that. And I think fair play would indicate if someone starts this sort of dispute, the other person's got a right of reply, but the instigator is now taking it to the courts, and he's got it in three different legal jurisdictions. As we mentioned last week, funded by Climate 200. It's got nothing to do with climate change, obviously. That's self-evident. He's funded by millionaires and is doing it for some bizarre political reason.
Let's talk about what's going on this week with the Quad Leaders Summit. It's been scrapped. Anthony Albanese confirmed yesterday that that was the case. US President Joe Biden's decision to cancel the, well, they say much-anticipated visit to Australia. Because of this ongoing debt ceiling negotiations with Republicans in Washington. But he is off to the G7, and so too is Anthony Albanese. Even though we're not part of the G7, of course, it's good that we've been invited to go.
Well, a couple of points. I suppose from an Australian perspective, we always need to understand that we're nowhere near as important to the Americans as we'd like to think. Your average American would struggle to identify Australia on the map. In their political system, they've turned inwards much more in recent decades and obviously have a much bigger focus on European politics these days. So the Quad, which is the United States, Japan, India and Australia, designed to contain the growth of China, is a good idea in theory, but unless the leaders are willing to meet and make it a priority, it's not going to amount to a hell of a lot. And some people are saying this is a big diplomatic free kick for the Chinese. But I think we also need to perhaps factor in that Biden, at his age and state of mind and all these suggestions about his fragility, just can't travel as much as a president who was younger and fitter and more outward looking. So there's a real issue there, isn't there? Even someone like Bob Carr apparently today is saying, well, you know, Biden's got an inbuilt frailty to him that probably limits his travel, and we're going to see a lot more of Kamala Harris on the international stage than the American president.
Can I ask you, further down the track, looking at 2024, what's your thoughts? Do you think it's going to be another rerun of the last election, Biden v. Trump?
Well, it's the battle of the old men, isn't it? The very old men.
Yeah.
It's shaping up that way. Trump is ahead in the polls for the Republican nomination. Biden says he's running again. Would they roll an incumbent Democrat president? Who's the clear threat to him? I don't think you can pinpoint one. So, yeah, a lot of people say the United States is a fading power. And when you get two guys like that who are just so long in the tooth, shot-worn, in Biden's case, showing some signs of mental deterioration. It's not a very good sign for what has been the world's greatest democracy and strongest economy, is it?
What do you think these charges, allegations, etc., against Trump in reference to, you know, sexual discrimination and abuse and all this sort of thing, what do you think that these... Do you think there will be any negative against Trump, or do you think his people that support him don't listen to this sort of thing? They think, no, 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 that's not Donald. Donald didn't do that. They believe what Donald is saying. Of course, Donald says every chance he gets that, you know, it didn't happen, it didn't happen, it didn't happen.
Well, in 2016, it didn't hurt him. The Access Hollywood tape, Billy Bush, that was infamous and explosive in October of that election campaign, and Trump still won. And I've got to say, Brent, you know, I follow politics reasonably closely. Can anyone keep track of all these allegations against Trump that just keep rolling on and rolling on? The latest round of them, where were they 7 years ago when he was first running to be president? What? Why a seven-year delay in putting these things out there? So there's a lot of them. Some have been finalised in civil proceedings. Others are ongoing. And I'm sure your average Australian, along with your average American voter, would just be thinking, I'm totally confused about it. And anyway, I'm more interested in what Donald Trump does for international diplomacy, this American economy, and all those things that matter, rather than what appear to be never-ending allegations of sexual harassment.
Support for the Indigenous Voice has, in the latest survey that's come out this week, support for the Indigenous Voice has tumbled from 58 to 53% over the past month in the crucial yes or no question. It seems as though, and we've been watching these polls every time a poll comes out, it seems as though the longer it goes on, the more chance there is that this won't get across the line. The yes vote, each poll gets smaller and smaller, only by a little bit, but it's going in the wrong direction, in other words.
Well, it's a long-term trend in referenda questions. The more doubts that arise, the more risks that come up in the public debate, the more the public think about these matters, why change? There's a natural inclination to think, well, there seems to be some real problems with this, some suspicion that it's not what it's presented as. Why do we really need a separate Indigenous voice? If it's just an advisory committee, do we really need to change the Constitution to do that? If we're changing the Constitution, surely it's much more serious. Does it involve compensation, higher taxes, extra land right claims? This is the pattern of what happens in a referendum campaign and debate, where the public get more information and they grow more sceptical of what it's really about, not trusting the politicians who are putting it forward. So I'm not surprised the Voice is in steady decline in terms of its popularity, and I think it's probably, along with, you know, dozens of other referenda in the past, doomed to fail because people just don't see the sense, the need for it, and Albanese's been a bit confusing as to what it's really about.
Do you think that Albanese, as the Prime Minister, should have put out more information to the general public about exactly what this is all about by now?
Well, I think he should have answered the fundamental question that I just raised, that if it's just an advisory committee to a bunch of politicians, why have we got to change the Constitution and set it in stone? And if we are changing the Constitution, surely it's something big. You know, the Constitution in the past has been changed to give the Commonwealth Government income tax powers, welfare payment powers, you know, really big things that matter to the country. So Albanese has sort of been pretending that, oh, this is just, you know, pretty harmless sort of suggestion, but we've all got to go to the polls and we've got to officially change the Australian Constitution. Well, those two things don't add up, do they? And there's no doubt there's a whole bunch of serious lawyers who say if you put the Voice in the Constitution, it will be compensation claims, it'll be high court action, it'll be litigation, it'll be slower development approvals, it'll be land claims, it'll be a rewriting of Australian history. Because it's in the Constitution, it's going to take a much bigger status than just some innocent advisory committee. And I think as that question remains unanswered by the Prime Minister, it's not surprising that the Voice is going south in the polls.
I listened to an interview with the guy that's heading up the Yes campaign for the Voice the other day, and when he was asked questions, I mean, he was dodging left, right and centre. So either he didn't have the answers or he didn't want to answer the questions, because there was a lot of talk about treaty, which is part of the Uluru Statement and all of this sort of thing. And the second thing in that is treaty, treaty, treaty. And asked about treaty, which, you know, at the end of the day means payments, doesn't it, for land, for land rights, etc., he didn't want to address it, so he didn't.
Well, you know, there's another one that's unanswered. If they've got a claim to a treaty, what does that actually mean in detail? Is it compensation payments from higher taxes on non-Indigenous? Is it extra land right claims? Is it some historical claim to reparations? Is it the right to, you know, recast the entire nature of Australian history? Changing what our kids learn in schools? A treaty could be anything, really. A treaty is as big as a constitutional change itself. So if they can't answer questions about that, then people have got the right to say, well, I don't really understand why we're doing this, so I can't support it.
The One Nation leader nationally, Pauline Hanson. Mark, she's pushing to write the no case. I think she wants to write the no case as part of the Voice referendum pamphlet. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it would be unusual for politicians to write the yes and no documents. The Parliament authorises the conduct of the referendum, and the government would make an appropriation to pay for the various campaigns, yes and no. But I assume they set up committees, don't they? There'll be a committee that writes the yes campaign. There'll be a committee that writes the no. I suppose on the no committee, you might have Warren Mundine, maybe Jacinta Price, another senator, Pauline, to go on the committee. So I don't think she'll get to write it individually just by herself, but I assume they set up committees that authorise this material that goes out there. I never think it's the best use of public money, actually. People get a lot of information out of the media. I mean, The Voice on radio is constantly discussed. We've had a good conversation about it now, so maybe save the taxpayers some money, the long-suffering taxpayers, and just leave it to the media and the public to make up their mind. If you drop a leaflet in someone's letterbox all over the country, you know, many millions of letterboxes, not a lot of it gets read. It goes straight in the bin, and we've wasted our money.
She said, I want to have a say in it because I don't trust them. I don't know who
them is. Well,
that's
a popular sentiment. Well, that's a popular sentiment. She doesn't trust the people who are advocating for it, and that's showing up in the polls. But, you know, Pauline, as a senator, gets a say in whether or not they authorise the referendum out of Parliament, and obviously she gets a say in the media to talk about it and advocate for why it shouldn't go ahead. So she'll probably get on the committee, but as I say, I'm not too sure it's the best way of spending our public money.
The 2021, it's called Progress in International Reading Literacy Study Test. It was released yesterday. It measured trends in Year 4 students' reading literacy across 57 nations, and it found that Australia's overall results remain relatively stable compared with the most recent survey in 2016. We, this time round, rank 11th out of those 57 nations, Mark.
Well, that looks a fairly impressive result, I suppose. No decline, but at the bottom line, within those national figures, there's some really disturbing data that one in five Year 4 students are not heading towards being literate. They haven't got proficiency skills in reading at this stage. And further into the data, 30% of students from a disadvantaged background and 40% from an Indigenous background are heading towards illiteracy. So that problem remains. It's a huge failing of the education system if whole classes of people, year four students, are not being taught the basics of how to read and write. And it means that their prospects in education, their prospects for getting a job, their prospects in society are pretty limited. So we haven't gone backwards, but we have this lingering, in many ways tragic, problem of a whole cohort, a big number of our year four students, not being taught how to read properly. They haven't had the phonics education. They've been subject to experiments or fad programs in reading that just don't work. And that's a problem right across the entire school education system in Australia.
Enrolments in private schools across Australia have grown by 35%. And in fact, that's been surged by student numbers have risen in Islamic and Christian schools.
Yeah, this is another trend that's very important. The independent schools led by the Christian, Islamic and some of the others are surging in numbers. And it raises the issue, well, if they don't get some capital funding support off the government, then the students won't be accommodated properly in those private schools. They'll have to go back to government schools the parents don't want to be in. And why don't they want to be in government schools? I think there's two basic problems: the deterioration in discipline, Unfortunately, some government schools now are teaching wacky political stuff. Behavioural standards have declined. The teachers sort of have the attitude, as long as the kids are happy, which means the kids can do whatever they like. There's an overemphasis on so-called well-being instead of academic results. And parents are voting with their feet and voting with their wallet. So many parents say, look, I've got the resources to get my child into a non-government school. And some of these Christian Islamic schools are quite affordable now. So they're putting their kids first and going for a place that's got discipline, going for a school that teaches the right values, that stays away from political content and just sticks to the basics of helping them read, write, do numbers and go on to get a good job.
And I can only see those numbers increasing because of exactly what you've just said in years to come.
Yeah, all the surge in enrolments is in the independent sector. The Catholic system has got some growth, but the big numbers that are growing are in the independent schools, including the Anglican, the what you might think of as the born-again Christian schools, the Islamic schools, and they are surging in numbers, whereas the government school enrolment share is edging downwards. And I think that's a real vote of no confidence, isn't it? I mean, the Teachers' Federation, the new education minister can try and pump up the tyres of government schools and put out, you know, material saying how wonderful it is, but the parents know best, don't they? The parents look at the results, the parents listen to their children, what's been happening in the classroom today, the disciplinary problems in some cases. I mean, you know, no one wants to send their kid to school to get bashed up or bullied and then nothing happens to the perpetrator. So, you know, they vote with their feet, they vote with their wallet, and it's a vote of no confidence in the government school sector.
Let's talk football and the Dragons. They've lost their coach. A discussion was held between directors on Monday night before Tuesday's official board meeting, and it was announced at the end of that meeting that they were going to replace him. What's your? I mean, do you think it? I don't know, Mark. It was the writing was on the wall, wasn't it?
Yeah, the results aren't there, but Brent, I thought this was your chance to gloat.
No.
About the success of yourself. I thought you'd be rubbing it right into me. You're a supporter of the South Sydney Rabbitohs. Flying high at the top of the ladder. The poor old Dragons were equal last, and for an old, famous, once proud club, it's really demoralising for the supporters. But, you know, can I just make the point for the rugby league fans? I think it's more than coincidence. The two merger clubs, the Illawarra St George Dragons and the West Tigers, are both at the bottom of the ladder. These mergers aren't working. The clubs have got a split board, split personality, split identity, and unfortunately, dismal results. So I think the rugby league needs to do something about either reversing those mergers or putting the new ownership structure in place for these clubs to give their long-suffering fans, of whom I'm one for the Dragons, a bit of hope in life.
Yeah, I've got to go. But do you know the name Peter Newell?
No.
Peter Newell was I suppose he did so much work for the Steelers when they first started out. He was the guy that was in charge of the Illawarra Mercury, the local paper down there, and he just did so much for the Steelers. He'd be turning in his grave, seeing what's going on at the moment, sadly.
Oh, we're all turning. We're all turning to look away from the Dragons' results and performance. So, Peter Newell, wherever you are, mate, we're suffering for you. Don't worry.
Good to talk to you, mate. We'll catch up with you next week.
See you, Brent.
Thanks,
all
Mark. Bye-bye.